place, Agent Magnus grumbles. Bunch of superstitious clucks. They'd jump off the roof if someone told them the building was unlucky.
Thanks for having my back, I say.
Don't sweat it, kid.
Agent Magnus strokes his beard.
No way was I gonna let him throw you in jail or send you to some lab to be studied. But I ain't gonna lie. I'd rather the chief sent you home. I don't say it to be mean. I just want you to be perfectly clear on what you're signing up for here. Your brother's arrest of Moreau is still fresh in everyone's minds. And Moreau's awful deeds are well documented, as are the past 700 years of magician crimes in our world. People are going to form opinions and say nasty things about you based on nothing more than what you are. You sure you're prepared for that?
I smile a little. Am I prepared for that? It's kind of like how being a black kid from the projects makes Mr. Jensen feel the need to watch me extra close every time I come in his store, or how surprised my scholarship interviewers were that I could speak so well. People assume stuff about you based on things you can't change about yourself. So I just do my best to prove them wrong, to be the person they're not expecting. Amari Peters, changing minds one person at a time. I'm prepared, I say. I've been practicing my whole life. Agent Magnus gives me a small nod and pats me on the back. Unlike most of the other floors, the special events floor doesn't have a lobby. It's just a wide hallway that bends out of sight. I follow Agent Magnus down the hall, past doors labeled ballroom, meeting room, and formal dining room. Finally, we reach one marked Grand Theater, where a young guy in a gray suit rushes over to tell Agent Magnus,
"It's almost our turn."
"I'm right behind you," Magnus replies.
Then he turns to me.
"The presentations have already started, so go on in and take a seat at the back."
As much as I appreciate Agent Magnus's help, I realize I need to make something clear. For as long as I get to stay, I'm going to be searching for my brother, whether you help me or not.
Agent Magnus frowns. "Quentin would much rather you stay safe. This is dangerous stuff."
"I don't care how dangerous it is," I say. "I care about Quentin."
"And he cares about you. Heck, you're all he used to talk about. Amari this and Amari that. So before you do something dumb, I'd ask you to consider how Quentin's gonna feel if he manages to get himself found, only to discover something terrible has happened to his little sister because she went looking for him. He'd be devastated."
I don't know what to say to that. Agent Magnus knows he dropped a truth bomb right smack on my forehead. He's already started down the hallway. Shoulders slumped, I step into a massive, darkened theater with endless rows of seats curving around a wide stage. I'm thankful that whatever this is has already started. Everyone's attention is on the stage instead of me. I'm even more thankful to find Elsie waving me over to a seat she saved for me in the last row.
"Your aura's yellow again," says Elsie. "What happened back there?"
I shrug. She lowers her voice.
"People are saying, are you really a magician?"
"I think so," I say. "An illusionist." Elsie thinks on this for a few seconds.
"Well, if anybody gives you mean looks, you let me know and I'll
not breathe fire on them." I smile.
"Hey,"
she says, giving me a playful punch.
"I'm working on shifting. Just you wait."
"Thanks for not freaking out," I say.
"Well, if you can handle rooming with a girl who could turn into a dragon at any time, then I can handle being friends with a baby magician. I'm really glad they're letting you continue on."
"Me too," I say, and then point toward the stage.
"So, what's this all about?"
Elsie hands me her copy of 1001 Careers and says,
It's basically a presentation from each department explaining what they do and why we should choose them. I flip through the pages. What have I missed so far? Not a whole lot, says Elsie. Somebody from the Department of Supernatural Licenses and Records nearly put us all to sleep with a demonstration of orderly filing techniques. And just now, Director Rubbish, from the Department of Half-Truths and Full Cover-Ups, invited a few kids on stage and had them pick out their favorite historical event so she could explain what really happened. Did you know that World War I started because a few tiny alien ships accidentally crash-landed into Archduke Franz Ferdinand and his wife? Everyone thought it was an assassination. The aliens visit 3 times a year to apologize for the mix-up. The departmental presentations are amazing. A man from the Department of Hidden Places steps out of a top hat where he claims an entire city is kept. A woman from the Department of Dreams and Nightmares puts the entire front row of the theater to sleep with a snap of her fingers, and then convinces them that they're all being chased by a giant evil teddy bear named Bubbles, destroyer of worlds. 2 grumpy old men from the Department of the Unexplained tell us absolutely nothing at all about what they do, on principle. A girl from the Department of Supernatural Health has us clap along as she sings a man out of a coma. I'm about to ask if Elsie has any idea how long that poor guy has been in a coma when shouts ring out from above us. Every head in the theater turns upward to find men and women in gray suits running across the walls. They leap into the air, doing flips and twirls overhead. Wow. A couple of them swing whips of fire, while others twirl staffs of glittering light. Finally, each one stops to toss a plate in every direction. Out of nowhere, Agent Fiona appears, standing upside down on the ceiling, and draws a bow and arrow. She fires a single arrow that explodes into a flash of lightning that branches out to destroy every plate. Eventually, they all land on stage, bowing to thunderous applause from the trainees. I'm clapping too, my heart pounding with excitement. That was amazing. That's when Agent Magnus walks on stage to join them, frowning harder with every step.
I'm guessing you all know an agent when you see one. And I'm guessing a great many of you are thinking of trying out. Am I right? Well, what they don't tell you is that there ain't a more dangerous job in the whole Bureau. Agents get hurt. Good agents, too. In nasty, gruesome ways. I know I'm wasting my breath. You'll all be after the glory and excitement that comes with wearing this gray suit. You all want to be real-life superheroes, am I right? Well, just don't say you weren't warned.
Then he turns and stomps off the stage. The demonstrations continue for hours, but I'm barely paying attention. I'm thinking about trying out for junior agent, and not just because of how cool the Supernatural Investigations presentation was. Everything about Quentin is there. It's where he works, where the people who know him work, and even where the people who are searching for him will be. But Agent Magnus's warning felt especially meant for me, a reminder of what he just told me about putting myself in unnecessary danger. Once the demonstrations are finally over, the lights come up and cards are passed around the theater. On them, you're supposed to write down your top 5 choices. I watch Elsie scribble Department of Magical Science as her top choice, and then quickly fill in the other 4 slots. I stare down at my own card and scribble Junior Agent in big letters. I scratch it out just as fast.
I think you'd make a great agent, says Elsie. You're Peters. You've practically got hero in your genes.
Her eyes are so full of belief that it almost convinces me. I shake my head.
I don't feel like a hero.
Maybe Agent Magnus is right. Quentin would want me to be safe. And besides, my supernatural ability is illegal. They probably wouldn't even let me in.
Do you want in? Elsie asks.
I nod. Good. Because if the situation were reversed,
I don't think there's anything anyone could say to Quentin to convince him not to look for you. She's got a point. If my stubborn, hard-headed brother decided he was going to look for me, no one would be able to stop him. Elsie smiles.
Now go on and get yourself into supernatural investigations so we can start our own investigation.
Did she say we? You mean you'll help me find out what happened to Quentin?
Elsie nods. I'll do whatever I can. Promise. Just having one person with me is a huge weight off my shoulders. I instantly feel 10 times lighter. Grinning, I jot down Department of Supernatural Investigations. I'm still beaming when I hand it to the guy collecting them at the back of the theater. He takes a quick peek at my card and nearly drops the entire stack in surprise. Not only did I pick Supernatural Investigations as my top choice, I left the other 4 slots empty.
12. After the departmental presentations, we're given the rest of the afternoon off to get ready for the welcome social at 6:30. It's a chance for all the incoming trainees to get to know one another. Except, while most of the other kids crowd the hallways joking and laughing and comparing outfits, Elsie and I lock the door to our room and begin our investigation into the disappearance of Van Quish. First, we need to come up with an actual plan and then make sure we follow it, says Elsie. The best way to do that is to put it into writing. She uses her sleeve to wipe some equations from her whiteboard before she lays it down on the floor between our beds. So, what's been your plan so far? I bite down on my lip. I don't really have a plan. Elsie shoots me a look. You were just going to make it up as you go along? My cheeks flush. It does sound pretty dumb when you say it like that. My roommate just shakes her head. You can't investigate anything without a plan. She pulls the top off her marker and writes. Step 1, come up with a plan. Did you really even have to write that? I ask. Yes, now let's think. We're both quiet for a bit before I say, I guess what I've been doing so far is just trying to get some answers about the Bureau's investigation, but all Agent Magnus will tell me is that it's classified. It's like the only word he knows. Elsie nods and writes out, Step 2. Find out what the Bureau already knows about Van Quish's disappearance. And that's when I realize I actually did have a plan. I slide off my bed onto the floor beside Elsie and pick up one of her spare markers. I write, Step 3, use what we find out to launch our own investigation. My roommate grins. This is a good start. Too bad we're going to be stuck on Step 2 forever. It's not like they'll suddenly decide to make the Van Quish files unclassified just for us. You're probably right, says Elsie. But we don't need the files. We just need to find someone who knows something and might be willing to talk. I think back on all the people I've met at the Bureau so far. Then it hits me. Elsie looks up at the same time as I do, and we both say, The Van Helsing twins. Their dad is the director of Supernatural Investigations. They're bound to have heard something about the search. Hope you feel like dancing, says Elsie, because they'll definitely be at the social tonight. When 6:30 comes, Elsie's all dressed and ready to go. She put on one of the dresses that made their way into our closet after the departmental presentations. Her dress is so cool. It looks like she's wrapped herself in sparkling blue ocean. Waves seem to ripple across the fabric, and a school of bright orange fish zips around her waist. The water looks so real, I think my hand might get wet if I touch it. Somehow, our closet seems to magically contain whatever outfit we need. I wish it would magic up some comfy pajamas, because that's how little I feel like going to a welcome social. You're still not dressed? Elsie makes an exasperated face. There's got to be an easier way, I say, Can't we just surprise one of them in the hallway or something?
The Van Helsing twins stay with their parents in the director apartments, says Elsie. The only time they come down here is to visit one of their friends. It could take weeks to run into them by chance. We don't have that kind of time.
Fine, I groan.
Elsie skips over to the closet. There's a white dress in here from Madame Dubois that would be amazing on you. She holds it up, and it looks like it's made of actual clouds.
Ugh, like I need any more attention.
It'll be bad enough just showing up as the magician who received a moonstone badge this morning.
You're looking at this the wrong way, says Elsie. Lara and her friends love anything that gets them more attention. Being the magician girl with a moonstone badge is the reason they'll want to hang out with you.
She holds up the cloud dress again. You're kind of a big deal. Might as well look the part. 15 minutes later, the two of us take an opera singing elevator named Luciano back to the special events floor. Music booms behind the golden ballroom doors. Two ladies in butler uniforms push them open for us. I stop cold. When they said this year's theme is Winter Wonderland, they really meant it. It's snowing inside the huge ballroom. Snow-covered fir trees grow straight up out of the floor, and huge ice sculptures of dancing penguins and laughing polar bears fill up the spaces between the candlelit tables. Kids dance in mid-air, squealing and laughing, as they're carried back and forth by swirling gusts of wind. I start to feel that same bubbly excitement I got the first time I saw those underwater trains with Quentin. This is incredible. Elsie's freckled face beams as she takes my hand. Ready? As ready as I'm going to be. As we make our way through the tables, I do my best to ignore all the stunned faces that turn my way. It's hard, though. It feels like the whole room is staring. This is just what I was afraid of, having the same outsider spotlight shining down over me as I had back at Jefferson Academy. I honestly feel like I could throw up.
There's Lara, says Elsie, nodding toward a tall girl in a dress that sparkles like diamonds moving through the crowd of kids near the snack table. Let's go talk to her while she's alone.
I fight down my nerves and try to focus on why I'm here. To get answers. After a deep breath, I say, let's do it.
Be confident, Elsie says.
Right, I say. Confident.
And whatever she says about me, just ignore it. We can't blow this chance.
Before I can ask what she means, Elsie reaches Lara and gives her a polite tap on the shoulder. When Lara spins around, it's like she's posing for a photo or something. That girl is crazy pretty, like never used a filter in her life pretty. Lara frowns and rolls her eyes when she realizes it's Elsie. What do you want? Please tell me you aren't here to beg me to be friends again. If Elsie's feelings are hurt, she doesn't show it. I just thought you'd like to meet the Amari Peters. Lara finds me over Elsie's shoulder and her whole face lights up. She brushes past Elsie like she's not even there. Next thing I know, Lara is throwing an arm around my shoulder and snapping a quick selfie.
I'm Lara Van Helsing, she says confidently. You may not know this, but your brother and my sister were partners.
All I can think to say is, they're famous.
So dumb.
The most famous. Lara grins.
You have to come sit at our table, she says, leaning in close. My friends are dying to meet you.
Actually, I was kind of hoping to talk to you about Vanquish.
Just come and say hello, Lara interrupts.
It'll take 2 seconds. Then we can talk all about my sister and your brother. Deal? Lara looks at me like telling her no would break her heart. I glance around, but Elsie is nowhere to be found.
Don't worry about Elsie. We used to be besties like forever ago. But that was before she went and got boring. I mean, come on, a were-dragon who can't even shift? Anyway, you coming?
Who does this girl think she is? I'm just about to tell her about herself, but remember Elsie's warning just in time. She knew Lara might badmouth her and told me to ignore it. So, hard as it is, I force a smile and say, maybe just a quick hello. Lara squeals and takes my hand, then leads me to the other side of the ballroom where a few tables have been pushed together. The kids there all look bored silly. Lara clears her throat loudly. Meet my new friend, Amari Peters. That gets their attention. They all turn to look at me. Feeling myself flush, I give a little wave. One of the boys stands up and says, "You can have my seat." That's when Dylan Van Helsing catches my eye. He's seated on the other side of the table, arms crossed, just like his sister. He's cute enough that he looks like he flies out to international modeling gigs after the last school bell rings. He mouths, "Don't." But before I can react, Lara practically shoves me down into the seat. Dylan sighs and shakes his head. "They're really letting you stay on after cracking the crystal ball?" asks a girl in a gown that looks like a starry night sky. I'm Kirsten Kirst, by the way. My heart sinks down into my belly. "I didn't actually crack it," I say quickly. "It was an illusion." I shrug. "An accident." The others all look at one another with wide eyes.
"And they know you're a magician?"
asks a boy in a shiny metallic gold suit.
"I heard all the worst magicians were illusionists."
I nod. "They're, giving me a chance to prove myself." A boy in a sky blue suit holds up his phone.
"Geez, her touching the crystal is trending at number one. Can you believe that?"
"I am," I say. "On YouTube?" "Not the internet," says Kirsten. "The other net. It's the protected part of the internet we use in the supernatural world."
"Oh," I say. "Well, it really was a killer entrance," he replies. "No way it'll ever be topped."
I crack a nervous smile. Lara is awful, but maybe her friends aren't. Maybe they understand. I wish it had been a boring entrance. I'd even take a different badge if I could. No one at the table returns my smile, and I wonder if I've said the wrong thing. I glance over at Dylan again, but he won't meet my eyes.
"Amari, settle an argument for us," says another boy.
"One last vacation before you die. London or Rome?" "I've never been to either," I say. He looks shocked.
"Oh, I bet your people are yacht people, right? Saint-Tropez?"
I sit staring at the table in front of me. These kids really do live in a totally different world. Yachts and trips to fancy places. What do I know about that? "My family isn't rich," I say. "It's just me and my mom. She's a nursing assistant at a hospital."
"A nursing assistant?"
asks Brian Lee, who I remember touching the crystal ball right before Elsie.
"Aren't nurses already assistants?"
Laughter. My fists clench beneath the table. It feels like I'm drowning.
"But if your family is broke,"
asks the boy in the gold suit, "then how did you and Quentin get in?"
"Didn't you know?"
answers Lara, who's finally made her way around the table to take a seat next to her brother. "Quentin wasn't a legacy kid. He was merit." The whole table goes quiet. They all stare at me, like I've got two heads or something.
"What does merit mean?" I ask.
Kirsten leans in. "It means your brother got in for doing something noteworthy, like saving a family from a burning building, or acing one of the national exams. Most kids at the Bureau get in because they have a family member who nominated them. Many of us can trace back our family history in the Bureau for hundreds of years."
"The Van Helsings founded the Bureau," Lara adds, matter-of-factly. Merits are basically what the Bureau does to fill any leftover seats once the legacy nominations have all been sent out, says Kirsten. Well, says Lara, I don't mind, as long as they know their place. What's that supposed to mean? I ask. It means they shouldn't set their sights too high, says Kirsten. They should just take an unimportant specialty and be grateful. Lara rolls her eyes. But you know they won't. They'll all try out for junior agent anyway. So what if Quentin was Merritt? I say. My brother was one of the best agents there's ever been. Even a broken clock is right twice a day. Lara cocks her head to one side. My father tells us about it every year. Merritt kids who go out for fancy specialties only to fail the tryout and get sent home without a scholarship. And let's be real, they're the ones who really need the scholarships. You can only try your best, I say. Why shouldn't they choose something that really interests them? Did you read that off a poster? Lara covers her mouth dramatically. Wait, don't tell me you signed up for junior agent. I mean, technically you're a legacy kid, but barely. What if I did? Lara huffs, and I see it. That same I'm better than you attitude flashes in her eyes that I used to see in Emily Grant's. Please. Do you really think lightning is going to strike twice? I mean, one ghetto kid stumbling into fame is rare enough, don't you think? She leans closer, lowering her voice so that she's practically growling at me. Face it, fancy badge or not, you don't even have a supernatural ability, not a real one. Snickers ring out around the table. I do, I say. Then show us, says Lara. I just sit there as the others try to hold in their laughter. Lara pokes out her bottom lip mockingly. How tragic. I stand up from the table quickly, knocking my chair over. Leave me alone! I'm shaking. Or what? You and your disgusting magician friends will sick your nasty hybrids on me? You shouldn't even be here. I don't only hear Lara's voice. I hear Emily Grant and her stuck-up friends, too. Anger surges through me, and then suddenly, a swirling blaze of fire erupts on the table between me and Lara. My breath hitches, and the kids fall over one another as they scramble to get away. Disgusting magician. Lara glares at me over the blaze. That's when I feel two hands steer me away from the table. Hey, I say in protest, but it's just Elsie. She's a lot stronger than she looks. I glance over my shoulder to see my fire fade away without a single burn mark anywhere. Thank goodness. Elsie doesn't let me go until we're back on the other side of the ballroom. Your aura was burning red, she says. Figured I'd get you out of there before you did something you'd regret. She sets a plate in front of me. Eat. Maybe I don't. The aroma of the pepperoni pizza hits me, and I don't even remember what I was saying. I start in immediately on a thick, cheesy slice. I'm halfway through it when Elsie says, I'm guessing things didn't go well, huh? I groan. I don't think Lara ever wanted to talk about Quentin and Maria. She just wanted to get me in front of her stupid friends to make fun of me. Elsie winces. Sounds like Lara. I thought with how much she looked up to Maria, she might want to help us. She shakes her head. She wasn't always like that. When we were younger, back before she cared about being a Van Helsing, she used to be really nice. Well, that Lara is long gone. Elsie nods. Once I finished my plate, I pull out my new cell phone and set it in front of Elsie. Can you show me how to access the other net? I want to be able to check social media. Do you really think that's a good idea? Asks Elsie. The supernatural world isn't much nicer than the known world. I know, I say.
I just want to show everyone the real me. Can you do it for me?
Okay, but you've got to promise me something in return.
Deal,
I say. Elsie not only downloads the app that lets me access the other net, she even creates a profile for me on Eeyore Filthil Thims Filthim, the leading social media site in the supernatural world.
How do you even pronounce that? I ask.
You don't, she replies. Humans don't have enough tongues.
Oh, okay then.
Elsie's request is that I go with her to the aerial dance floor. She swears it'll lift my spirits. And even though I don't ask, she can't wait to tell me how it works.
It's basically a mini tornado, but it's controlled so it isn't dangerous.
Even down here on the ground, I can feel the wind on my face. Kids whip around in fast circles high into the air and back down again.
Okay, the next time a spot opens up, we're jumping in, says Elsie.
I'm a little nervous, but with the way this whole day has gone, I just want to do something fun. And Elsie is so excited, it's hard for me not to feel it too. She nods along to the music, and next thing I know, so do I.
Elsie and I are next in line.
Ready? She asks. A hand lands on my shoulder. I turn to discover it's Dylan Van Helsing. I shrug it off, instantly annoyed.
Can't you guys take a hint?
He raises both hands in surrender.
Not me. My father wants to talk with you.
What does your dad want? I ask Dylan as I follow him across the ballroom. Lara could have run off to tell her dad about my fire illusion. What if he thinks I'm out of control? The chief made it clear that I'm on a short leash.
Dylan shrugs. No clue.
My heart is beating so fast, but not so fast that I don't realize I've got another chance at a Van Helsing twin.
Well, can you at least tell me if you know anything about what happened to my brother and your sister?
My dad said that he'd let us know as soon as they learned something. He grumbles. That was 6 months ago.
I shake my head. Another dead end.
Dylan stops to look at me. But I've done my own snooping around and managed to find out a few things on my own.
Tell me.
He gives me a questioning look. Why should I?
Because it's not just your sister that's missing. It's my brother, too. You should understand how I feel. Please.
I only hope he isn't as awful as his sister. Dylan frowns. For a moment, it seems like he won't answer. But then he says,
fine. But over there.
He points to an empty section of the ballroom. Once we're there, he says,
the Bureau knows who took Quentin and Maria. They have for months now.
Really?
Who was it?
Dylan drops his voice even lower.
It was one of Moreau's people. A couple months after Vanquish went missing, a letter arrived at the Bureau offering a trade. It said that if the Bureau refused, then no one would be safe. It was signed Moreau's Loyal Apprentice.
My breath catches.
Does that mean Quentin and Maria are alive? That they're okay?
I hope so, says Dylan.
If the letter was from Moreau's apprentice, then maybe Quentin and Maria were taken so they could be traded for Moreau's freedom. What did the Bureau do about the letter?
Doesn't seem like they did anything, Dylan says angrily. And there have been hybrid attacks ever since.
Hybrids. My brain tries to process what I just heard. The magician who's been attacking the Bureau is the same person who took my brother. I can't believe Director Van Helsing accused me of being that magician. Did he really think I'd kidnapped my own brother?
Wait, so the Bureau just ignored the letter?
As far as I can tell.
He looks me right in the eyes. But don't tell anyone what I just said if you know what's good for you. It's supposed to be top secret, classified.
I nod. I won't say a thing.
Dylan nods and says, come on, My dad is over with the other chaperones.
Hey, wait a sec. So, Elsie and I are doing our own investigating too. Maybe we could all work together?
He shrugs. Maybe. Then he turns and heads over toward his dad.
Maybe?
I think, following.
Director Van Helsing breaks off from a group of adults once we get close.
I saw you two head off by yourselves, he says. What was that about?
Sorry, says Dylan with a smirk. I was just telling Amari that she should leave the investigating to those with actual experience.
I glare at him. Why put me on blast like that? Especially in front of his dad.
Director Van Helsing narrows his eyes.
I see.
Did you need anything else? Dylan asks.
No, that's all, son, says Director Van Helsing.
Dylan walks off, and suddenly it's just me and Director Van Helsing. I just know I'm in trouble. I can't even meet his eyes. Director Van Helsing pulls out my card.
You've only written junior agent here.
That's what I want to do, I say, trying to sound confident. He sighs.
You want to follow in your brother's footsteps. That's understandable.
That's not the reason, I interrupt. I want to find out what happened to my brother. Everything there is to know about Quentin is in the Department of Supernatural Investigations, and the only way I can be there is to become a junior agent.
Even though he's trying to look calm, I can tell he's annoyed. Whatever the reason, you are clearly underestimating just how difficult it is to earn a position as junior agent. It's not only the most competitive specialty here, but you'll be competing with students from long-standing legacy families who have known about the supernatural world their whole lives. Children with the means to visit the places you'll only have read about. Private tutors and the like. You're at a tremendous disadvantage.
Maybe my chances aren't great, I say. But Quentin had the same disadvantage, and he was able to make junior agent. Your brother's supernatural ability was quite literally super genius aptitude. We could show him nearly anything once, and he'd learn it, just like that. He's the exception, not the rule, Amari.
I feel my shoulders droop. But it's still my choice, right?
Well, of course. I just want you to be realistic. It may not be fair, but our job is to choose the trainees who will make the best agents. My badge shows I've got as much potential as anyone, I say.
Van Helsing blows out a long breath. Understand that you don't get to come back next summer and try again like the other children. You are a magician, a criminal. And should you fail to prove you belong here, the chief will have no choice but to implement my suggestion to take your memories and send you home to be monitored. Trainees have until the first tryout to transfer into a different specialty. After that, you're on your own. There's never been a Moonstone Badge recipient who failed a tryout. But then, perhaps your being a magician is the only thing special about you.
He turns to leave, but stops himself.
And if I hear about you using another spell in this building, especially in my daughter's direction, you're gone, understand? Consider yourself extremely lucky that a witness vouched for you. Good night, Miss Peters.
The director stomps off. I could cry, I feel so discouraged. My phone buzzes. It says I've got a new message on my profile, but last I looked, it was still set to private, so how could anyone find me? Curious, I click on the flashing icon. New message from Magician Girl 18. Keep your head up, Amari Peters. You aren't alone. 13. The next morning, Elsie and I join a bunch of trainees at the youth dormitory elevators. We found our uniforms, a gray suit for me
and a white lab coat for Elsie, waiting for us in our closet. I nearly panicked when I saw my Moonstone badge sparkling on the front. How did it even get out of its case? Doesn't matter. No way am I walking around with a shimmering Look at Me badge attached to my jacket. I took it off and reattached it under my lapel to keep it hidden. All around us, kids talk excitedly. Once again, I'm thankful for the distraction because no one pays much attention to me and Elsie whispering near the back of the crowd. After last night, we've still got a lot to talk about.
I think Dylan was telling the truth about the letter, says Elsie. He's been honest for as long as I've known him. I'll bet whoever took Vanquish tried to trade them for Moreau. But that would mean the Bureau ignored a chance to get my brother back.
Elsie frowns.
They'd have to. Otherwise, every bad guy in the supernatural world would start kidnapping agents to make outrageous demands.
I hate that Elsie is making so much sense, because it doesn't make me feel any better at all.
What are you going to do about Magician Girl 18? Elsie continues.
A jolt of unease zips through me again. How did Magician Girl 18 even know I'd made a profile?
I already told you. I'm not doing anything about it.
But what if she's the same magician the Bureau is looking for? Elsie's face goes red.
What if she's Moreau's apprentice?
Why would that magician want to be nice to me? I ask. I'll bet it's actually somebody pretending to be a magician just to mess with me. Like when Emily Grant and her friends sent me friend requests out of nowhere just so they could post mean things on my page. Besides, Director Van Helsing already thinks I'm a criminal. That message is the excuse he needs to kick me out.
We find a spot on a packed elevator next to a large group of boys in scuba gear. Clearly, they're headed to the Department of Undersea Relations. Two girls in safari gear squeeze on last. Their name tags say they're trying out for the Department of Creature Control.
You don't think they'll make us walk through the woodland predator section, do you? One of them asks.
Maybe, says the other.
When my uncle was 12, he went totally bald after getting too close to an African lightning bird nest during his tour.
My stomach is doing flips, thinking about what my own first day will be like. Supernatural investigations is the most dangerous, most competitive specialty there is.
I'm pretty sure the first day is just a tour, says Elsie, giving me a soft nudge with her elbow. Nothing to be worried about.
Thanks, I say, remembering that she can see just how worried I really am. I don't think I'll ever totally get used to Elsie knowing exactly how I'm feeling, but right now, I need a little reassurance.
Director Van Helsing's words keep replaying in my head. Surely you can't fail a tour, can you? I shake out my nerves. I've got to focus on why I'm here. I need to find out if Dylan was telling the truth about the stuff he told me last night. Elsie might believe him, but the way he turned on me in front of his dad makes me worried he might have just been messing with me. I'll just have to find out for myself, which means the plan stays the same for Elsie and me. Find out as much as we can. And this tour is the perfect time to learn my way around Quentin's department, like where Quentin and Maria's office is located and where all the files are kept. As for how we'll get into those places, we'll figure that out later.
By the time the elevator arrives at the Department of Supernatural Investigations, it's half full. Around 30 kids in light gray suits all stand shoulder to shoulder. Seeing the lobby for the first time feels like I've somehow stepped into one of those old black and white movies. The floors are covered with black and white tiles. The walls are glistening white, and two black pillars surround a white statue of Abraham Van Helsing, driving a stake into Vladimir, one of the Knight brothers.
Good luck, Elsie says, as the elevator doors slide open. She gives me two big thumbs up.
Thanks, I say, stepping off.
You too.
If I wasn't nervous before, I definitely feel it now.
I gulp as the elevator lifts Elsie away.
You're on your own now, Amari.
It's not too late to turn back, sings a voice I recognize. Laura Van Helsing smirks at me from beside her brother at the far end of the line. Nearly all the kids from her table at the social are here too.
See that statue?
Laura adds. That's how the Bureau feels about magicians. She and her friends laugh. Only Dylan keeps a straight face. I ignore them and find a spot at the opposite end of the line. The lobby stays pretty quiet, except for the whispers coming from the twins' little group. Everybody else looks just as nervous as I feel. After a few minutes, there's a loud click, and a section of the back wall slides away. Agent Fiona steps into the doorway.
The Red Lady,
someone murmurs. It's easy to see how she got the nickname. Unlike yesterday, her blazing red hair is flowing and wild, falling down over her shoulders, like it might bite anyone who comes too close with a comb. Those piercing blue eyes dart around the room, like they're watching everything at once. So none of ye are any good at heeding warnings? Asks Agent Fiona. No one dares to answer. Well, don't go losing your nerve now, she says, pacing back and forth in front of us. If ye can't find your voice in front of me, what chance do ye have against a forest of tree zombies closing in for a bite? Or a score of stone-skinned gargoyles circling above ye with ill intentions? I'm sure you'll see to it we're ready for whatever comes our way, says Laura Van Helsing, stepping forward from the line. And I, for one, am ready for the challenge. Ugh, Laura is so full of herself. Agent Fiona stalks over, stopping directly in front of her. She towers over Laura, sizing the girl up. You've got the look of a lass who's hunting glory, little Van Helsing. And trust me, there's a good bit of glory to be found as an agent. But there's no surer way to fail at this than to go seeking it out. You'd do well to remember that. Ye all would. I'm enjoying the embarrassed look on Laura's face when those blue eyes find me. My heart skips a beat. Peters, Agent Fiona calls out. Step forward. And here I was, hoping to stay invisible today. But I do as I'm told. The way I feel as Agent Fiona approaches me is how gazelles must feel when a lion shows up. She puts her face really close to mine, staring into my eyes. It's completely different from how she looked at me yesterday, and it's all I can do just to stand my ground. Did I do something to make her mad? I suppose ye think you're special with your fancy badge, better than the rest of us. I shake my head.
No,
says Agent Fiona. Then can ye tell me what on earth made ye put down Junior Agent when ye ain't got a supernatural ability to speak of?
I do have a supernatural ability, I say. It's just illegal.
Same difference in the end, says Agent Fiona. When a werewolf's got ye by the throat, ye can be sure he won't be giving ye the courtesy of a timeout to let ye work out if it's okay to use your illusions or not. So tell me, why are ye here?
Agent Fiona read my intentions yesterday, so there's no point in lying. To find my brother. I hate how shaky my voice sounds.
So ye don't want to be an agent to help others, only yourself, that right?
And if I said you're wasting your time, then in all my years of training agents, I've never seen a worse prospect. A few kids snicker at that. Out of the corner of my eye, I see Laura clap a hand over her mouth to keep from laughing out loud. Agent Fiona might as well have punched me right in the gut. It's the same as always. Somebody looks at me and thinks that I'm not good enough. I drop my head.
Nothing to say, lass? Maybe I'm not Quentin,
but I bet I could be a decent agent if I decided to be. I'm tired of being underestimated.
You're wrong about me, I squeak out.
What's that? She says. I said you're wrong about me. I can be an agent.
So you mean to prove me wrong then?
I will prove you wrong.
That's so.
Well, it ain't just me doubting ye.
Agent Fiona points to the row of kids behind me.
They doubt ye too. Same goes for all the higher-ups who were so eager to tell me to turn ye away.
What have ye got to say to that?
I don't care. I will be an agent.
The red lady's expression softens so that she looks more like the woman who fought for me yesterday. She lowers her voice so that only I can hear her.
Keep that wildfire burning inside ye, lass, and let all of their doubts become kerosene. Because ye know what I see when a lass is maligned for something she can't help, and yet she still shows up anyway.
I shake my head.
Courage, says Agent Fiona. And that's what separates the wannabes from the agents in the end. Quentin didn't nominate ye because he needed a rescuer. He nominated ye because he believed ye can thrive here. Only you've got to believe it before anybody else will.
She leans back and unclips my Moonstone badge from beneath my lapel to place it back in its original spot. Now back in line with ye. I glance at the other trainees as I step backward. A couple look back at me with hesitant smiles, but most everyone else looks wary or even mad. It doesn't matter. Agent Fiona is right about one thing. I can be brave. I have to be. Agent Fiona cracks a wicked smile and opens her arms wide.
Welcome to Junior Agent Tryouts. Of all the trainees who wrote down junior agent on their cards, the 32 of ye are considered the cream of the crop. Those fancy badges ye carry signify you've got plenty of potential, but you've already come as far as those'll take ye. For the privilege of wearing this suit, you'll have to prove your worth in the tryouts. Now then, the name Senior Agent Melanie Fiona, and as ye may have gathered, I'm the one in charge of training and tryouts. There'll be 3 tryouts in all, designed to evaluate whether or not you're cut out for this. Simple enough. Any questions?
Can you really tell a person's intentions just by looking at them?
Asks a red-faced boy with a gulp.
Hey, Billy Pogo, answers the red lady, reading his name tag.
It's my supernatural ability, and plenty useful when it comes to interrogating baddies. Her eyes flash.
Right now, it's telling me ye can't wait to get this tour over with, so ye can get back to that slice of sweet potato pie ye got stashed back in your room.
You're amazing,
says Billy, wide-eyed. Agent Fiona gives him a wink.
Don't I know it?
Could you give us a clue about what these tryouts are? This is from Dylan Van Helsing.
Not a chance, the red lady laughs. Ye should know better than most that these things are very well-kept secrets. And even if I did tell ye, who's to say I won't change me mind later?
Is there anything you can tell us? I ask nervously.
3 things, Agent Fiona replies. For starters, while it's true we'll be training ye before and between the tryouts, your ability to pass won't just be a matter of how well ye learn. You'll need to have the right stuff already inside ye, the kinds of traits ye can't teach.
Second, she continues, the last tryout is called the finale. It's a culmination of all the training you've received. Comes in 3 parts. An exam on supernatural facts. A display of technique while dueling with sky sprints and stun sticks. And finally,
a demonstration of your supernatural ability. Don't expect ye to be masters, but you'll need to have gained some level of control over what ye can do. Peters, we're still debating what you'll do if ye make it that far.
And the third thing?
Blurts a very anxious-looking girl. A, answers Agent Fiona with a smirk. First tryout comes this Friday, meaning it'll be a short summer for a lot of ye. The announcement sends the lobby into a commotion. Friday is less than a week away.
I know there were 8 spots last year, says Dylan Van Helsing. How many spots are available this time?
The lobby quiets, waiting for an answer. Agent Fiona frowns. We had a few older agents who were set to retire, but decided to putter on for another year. Means we can only offer 4 spots this summer. If there was a commotion before, this sends the group into an all-out panic. I feel it too. Am I really capable of beating out 28 other kids? Agent Fiona raises her hands, and the lobby goes silent.
Quit your whining and carrying on. Ye all knew this was the most competitive specialty.
She grabs a short stack of paper from behind the Van Helsing statue. Now then, let's get these schedules handed out. I'm the first to get one, so I take a quick look. Junior Agent Trainee Summer Camp Schedule, Week 1, Supernatural Investigations Tour, Supernatural Knowledge Exam, Intro to Sky Sprints, Supernatural Immersion. First tryout, 32 trainees, dropped to 16. Weeks 2 and 3, Sky Sprints, Wall Running, and Aerial Maneuvers, Supernatural Immersion, Intro to Stun Sticks, Supernatural Knowledge, Self-Study. Second tryout, 16 trainees, dropped to 8. Week 4, question marks. Finale, 8 trainees dropped to 4 junior agents. Weeks 5 through 8, junior agent training begins. If I manage to get through the first tryout, I'll have 2 weeks to find out what happened to Quentin before I've got to prove myself again. But is that really enough time? It'll have to be. Now that you've had a moment to review your schedules, Agent Fiona calls out to the whole lobby. Let's get ye all separated into tour groups. When I call your name, come and stand beside me. Peters, ye stay put. It's just my luck that I get picked for the first tour group, along with Dylan Van Helsing. Why does he even need a tour? He must have seen this place hundreds of times growing up. Agent Fiona addresses my 8-person group. You're encouraged to ask questions while we tour the department, but more than anything, you'll need to keep out of the way. A lot of important business is being conducted that can't be disturbed. Ready? Then follow me. When Agent Fiona punches a code for the door, it hits me that I'm about to walk the same halls, see the same sights that Quentin did. The thought puts a warm feeling in my chest, but it also makes me miss him terribly. The door slides open, and Agent Fiona leads us into a wide hallway. It's a fast-moving river of gray suits, SWAT team gear, and fatigues going in both directions across a black and white tiled floor. This is the main hall, calls Agent Fiona over the noise. Leads from one end of the department to the other, making a giant U. Every area in the department can be reached from this hallway. If ye ever lose your way, simply seek out this hall to right yourself. We start up the left side of the U, keeping close to the wall to stay out of everyone's way. I stare up at the various wanted posters and Agent of the Month plaques. Agent Fiona brings our group to a quick stop when agents come bustling through a doorway, struggling to control a 10-foot-tall furry creature in ripped blue jeans and a green Save the Trees t-shirt. It's not making things easy at all for the agents,
squirming and kicking its feet wildly as it howls. I'm innocent, I swear! It was a Sasquatch, not me! Agent Fiona shakes her red tangles. Again, Bigfoot? What have ye gone and done this time? The agents wrestle Bigfoot through another door on the opposite side of the hall. Agent Fiona tells us to stay put and follows them inside. Half a minute later, she sticks her head back through the door and waves for us to follow. Line up just there and keep quiet, says Agent Fiona, once we've all crowded into the small room. Bigfoot is nowhere to be found. I've asked to take over so I can give ye a glimpse at what we do here. A few minutes later, an angry little bearded man in a green suit is brought in. He looks like the grumpy uncle of the guy in the Lucky Charms box. Is that a real leprechaun? I blurt out. I've really got to stop doing that. The little man turns around. Well, I ain't a bloody fake, that's for sure. Agent Fiona shoots me a look. Sorry, I mouth. Dylan Van Helsing chuckles beside me. I ask the same question the first time I saw one. That leprechaun still sends me hate mail. I laugh, but then quickly turn away from him. Maybe that's rude, but I won't forget what he said to me in front of his dad. Don't be like that, says Dylan. Who do you think vouched for you with my father? I told him how Laura and her dumb friends were teasing you. Dylan is the witness Director Van Helsing was talking about? He's the reason I wasn't punished for my fire illusion? I turn back to face him. This isn't a joke to me, okay? You can't be mean to me one second and then nice the next. I don't know if I can trust you or anything you told me. Dylan goes quiet, and I turn back to Agent Fiona. In a moment, I'm going to show ye five faces, she says to the leprechaun. Point out the one who took your pot of gold. He nods. Gotcha. Agent Fiona gives the far wall a knock, and it shifts into clear glass, revealing a strange group of people. Things? Creatures? First is an actual bear. Beside it is what looks like a man in a cheap Chewbacca costume. Next to him is Bigfoot from the hallway. Then another Bigfoot, only its fur is gray, and it's dressed in a fancy red suit and sipping a cup of tea. At the end of the row is a person-sized ant in a trench coat. An actual ant that's taller than I am. How did I never have any idea that all of these things exist? That's him, shouts the leprechaun, right there, in the t-shirt and jeans. Agent Fiona gives the transparent wall three knocks, and Bigfoot is led away grumbling. The other Bigfoot, the gray one wearing the suit, just rolls his eyes and adjusts his monocle. Agent Fiona is about to tell us something when the gray Bigfoot steps into the room. Melanie, darling, he exclaims. When they told me it was you out here, I simply had to come say hello. Sorry to keep dragging ye down here every time your cousin gets out of line, says Agent Fiona. I know it's a hassle. Nonsense, says the gray Bigfoot with a wave of his hand. Gives me a chance to try to talk some sense into him. Crime doesn't pay and all that. Falls on deaf ears, but, as they say, you can never give up on family. He gasps as his eyes land on me. As I live and breathe. Is that the Amari Peters? I wince as Agent Fiona says, that's her, all right. The gray Bigfoot sweeps into an elaborate bow. Allow me to introduce myself. I am Sir Francis Sasquatch III of the Yellowstone National Park Sasquatches, formerly knighted in both fairy courts. An absolute pleasure to meet you, sweetheart. You're all anyone's talking about. Really? I say. A magician at the Bureau. The gossip practically spills itself. What kind of gossip, I wonder? Well, I simply must be going. But if you're ever in the market for a good cave hideout with reliable escape routes, or maybe even a nice underground lair off the beaten path, I'm the Woodland real estate agent to the stars, honey. Think of me when you're done playing at this junior agent business and looking to start your criminal empire in style. Good or evil, when it comes to clients, I don't pick sides. Here's my card. Toodles. I take his notebook-sized business card and frown. A hideout? An underground lair? Is that what people think of me? That I'm destined to be the supernatural world's next supervillain? Agent Fiona leads us back into the main hallway. We follow it past the briefing auditorium to the tall wooden door protecting the great vault that Agent Fiona says is impenetrable. We end up at an area that's glassed off, with people passing in and out of glass doors. This is the operations bay, says Agent Fiona, the central hub where the director and assistant director oversee the missions carried out by our agents around the globe. We have outposts on every continent. Even Antarctica? I ask. Especially Antarctica, answers Agent Fiona. One of the seven great beasts, the abominable snowman, has been hibernating there for nearly three centuries, and sedatives must be given on a monthly basis to ensure he continues his slumber. He ain't called abominable for nothing. Tell you what, I'll give ye all a hint. Know your great beasts by heart. It's a question that gets asked every year in the finale. Most of our group presses their faces against the glass to gaze into the huge space full of men and women sitting at long tables topped with computers. Massive screens cover the other three walls, making the operations bay look like a NASA control room. One screen has the words, "Helmet Cam," written at the top, and shows agents in gray suits raiding a haunted house. Zombies pour out of doorways, and the agents keep slicing them to dust with burning swords. Another screen shows a smirking elderly man in a dusty rocking chair. This one is labeled Moreau Interrogation. That must be Moreau, the magician. Like me.
Is that really him?
Billy asks, with a shudder.
Is it really Moreau?
It's gotta be, says Brian Lee. Who else is that creepy?
I just hope wherever he is, comes another voice. It's far away from here.
Far? Says Dylan. Heck, he's right here in this building. Nearly the whole group gasps. Agent Fiona puts both hands on her hips and presses her lips tight. That's not for ye to go around repeating. Dilling nudges me with his elbow and says,
Well, maybe if the Bureau were better at catching his apprentices, my sister wouldn't still be missing.
I watch for Agent Fiona's reaction. She sets her jaw. One more word from ye, little Van Helsing, and I'll throw ye right out of these tryouts. I don't care who your father is. Understood? Dilling folds his arms, but stays silent. Agent Fiona might be upset, but she didn't deny Dylan's claim. Maybe he was telling the truth about the Bureau, knowing who took my brother. Moreau's apprentice. Which means this is my chance to get some answers. But I can't let her know what Dylan told me. That stuff is supposed to be classified. So I clear my throat and say, Has Moreau said anything at all about Quentin and Maria's disappearance? Agent Fiona sighs and shakes her head. These talks are nothing more than a formality. We question him once a week, and he refuses to answer a single question. Says the Bureau is the enemy of all magicians. No wonder he won't answer their questions. They've been sending agents to interrogate him, but agents are the reason he's locked away. An idea pops into my head. There might be an upside to my being a magician. Could I talk to him? I ask. The rest of my tour group gawks at me, but I focus on Agent Fiona. Maybe he'd be willing, since I'm also a magician. If the whole supernatural world thinks I'm destined to be a villain anyway, maybe Moreau will too, and say something that could help us find Quentin and Maria. Agent Fiona raises an eyebrow. Not a chance, Peters. You're on shaky ground as it is. There's no way the higher-ups are gonna risk Yi being corrupted by the single most dangerous being on the planet. Who says I'd be... I stop short as the hallway darkens and red lights begin to flash above us. What's going on? A siren blares, making me jump. Agent Fiona! Shouts the junior agent running up the hall. Tristan! Says Agent Fiona. What's happened? There's been an attack on one of our outposts. He replies. 30 hybrids have overrun the place. 30? Agent Fiona's face blanches. How's that possible? He shrugs. The director wants all senior and special agents to report to the operations bay immediately. The rest of the tour is canceled. Instead, we're taken into a large computer room, but my mind is still back at that red alert. If the Bureau refuses the trade, no one is safe. That's what the letter said, according to Dylan. The way Agent Fiona fussed at him, he had to be telling the truth. Just who is this apprentice that has my brother and Maria? And what's going to happen if we don't find them soon? An agent sits at a desk at the front of the room, speaking in the most boring monotone I've ever heard. I'm sure the red alert you all experienced must have been very disconcerting. Rest assured that we've got the very best people looking into it. Rather than have you kids idle, we've moved up tomorrow's supernatural knowledge examination to today. Do remember, this is merely a diagnostic, meaning no studying was required. It will merely serve to inform us where you currently stand. As much as I try to tell myself this exam doesn't count, I get more discouraged with each question. How am I supposed to know which two great beasts reside in the Atlantic Ocean? Or how old Merlin is? Or even what date the Bureau of Supernatural Affairs was founded? Not to mention, I keep getting distracted by the fact that Moreau is literally in the same place as I am. There's got to be a way for me to find out what he knows. When the exam is over, we're called into the office at the back of the classroom to meet with the instructor. Laura is first up and returns a few minutes later, red-faced. A measly 83, she tells Dylan. I told that ridiculous tutor we were focusing on the wrong things. When I see Daddy, I'm demanding a new one. If not even Laura could ace this test, I'm not looking forward to my own score. Unfortunately, I'm called in next. Take a seat, dear. I do. As the instructor taps away at her computer, I brace myself for the worst. I know I probably didn't do all that well. The instructor nods. You'd be correct. You scored a 4 out of 100, and that's probably due to a few good guesses, am I right? I nod. A 4? The instructor keeps typing away, not a trace of sympathy in her voice. Just means you'll need to devote a good bit of your time to studying in order to perform well during the exam section of the finale. I won't sugarcoat it, dear. You've got quite the uphill battle ahead, especially given your supernatural ability situation. I'll write you up a list of books to check out at the library. I suggest you begin your studies as soon as possible. The list she gives me is the length of my arm. I'm supposed to read all of these? When will I have time to search for Quentin? I leave the office in a daze. My phone buzzes inside my pocket. It's another message from the mystery girl. New message from Magician Girl 18. Bummer on failing the test. Wouldn't you rather be learning the truth about magicians? About Moreau? I spin around, searching the classroom. I look to Laura, then Dylan, then their circle of friends. Not a single person is on their phone right now. I type up a quick response from Amari_Peters.
How do you know that? Are you here too? And what do you know about Moreau?
The response is nearly instant as I scan the other trainees to see if anyone picks up their phone. No one does. I glance down at the message. New message from MagicianGirl18. First, you have to prove you can keep a secret. Don't tell anyone about my offer, and I'll contact you when the time is right.
14. By the time lunch comes around, I'm already stressed out about my chances of making junior agent. Maybe Director Van Helsing was right. Maybe I am in over my head. Feeling like I need to be doing something, I skip the first few minutes of lunch and head to the files and evidence room in the Department of Supernatural Investigations. Maybe if I can get permission to look at some of the files on my brother, it'll help me understand what the Bureau knows and what they're doing to find him. Unfortunately, the lady at the front desk makes it clear that trainees don't have access to classified files under any circumstance. What's worse, junior agents don't either, only the adults. And if that's not frustrating enough, Magician Girl 18 is spying on me somehow? I was so sure it was one of the other junior agent trainees trolling me. But none of them were on their phones when those messages came through. I made sure of it. Now I can't help but wonder if Elsie was right, and Magician Girl 18 really is the magician who took my brother and Maria. But what should I do about it? If I accuse her and I'm wrong, there's no telling how she'll take it. I certainly don't appreciate being called a criminal just because I'm a magician. A false accusation, especially against someone trying to help, could mean blowing the best chance I have to learn anything at all about Moreau and being a magician. I can't risk it.
Oh, says Elsie when she sits down to lunch with me in the food court. Tell me what you think about this. Lip gloss that shoots knockout gas. The antidote would be in the lip gloss itself, so once you put some on, you'd be immune. She's been like this ever since she got her mastermind inventor ability from the crystal ball. Out of nowhere, she'll get this intense look and then just start coming up with all sorts of ideas for cool new inventions. Yesterday, she got an idea for a microphone that turns your voice into that really high pitch that only dogs can hear. As long as the person you're talking to has an earpiece that picks up the sound, you could have totally private conversations in a crowded room, assuming there aren't any werewolves around. It feels weird not to tell Elsie about the new messages, but Magician Girl 18 was pretty clear. You might as well tell me, Elsie says. I blink and find my roommate staring right at me. Elsie leans closer. Your aura just went gray. What's wrong? I totally chicken out. Just worried about my test score. Elsie doesn't look convinced. Are you sure that's all? Chief Crow's voice booms over the intercom before I can answer. Trainee Amari Peters is requested in the office of the chief director immediately. Her private elevator will be waiting for you in the food court lobby. The food court goes completely silent, and nearly everyone turns to look in my direction. Nobody gets to use that elevator, says Elsie, eyes wide. Must be something really important. Why would the chief need to talk to me? I mean, unless I'm in trouble again. I swallow. Maybe they know about Magician Girl 18 after all. The chief's elevator is the last one on the row and is twice as big as the others. Normally, there's an off-limits sign on its front, but today, the doors are wide open. The floor is plush carpet, and the walls are all tinted mirrors, so those inside can see out, but nobody can look in. A pair of slippers sit near the entrance.
Are these slippers for me?
I ask, leaning inside. Man, this thing is fancy. Of course they are, says the elevator in a snooty voice. This carpet is made of fine, hand-woven unicorn hair, shed, not shaven, and it will not be blemished by the likes of you.